Okay, good evening. Wanted to talk a little bit about some of the issues in Mechiras Chametz. We've spoken about the general topic of Mechiras Chametz in the past, so just to maybe go into a little bit more detail in some of the specific issues and some of the historical issues, maybe expand a little bit. So first of all, historically, some of the challenges to our Mechiras Chametz have come from the question of whether the basis for Mechiras Chametz, as it's found in the Tosefta and in the Yerushalmi and recorded in the Poskim, is enough of a basis for what we have today, which is very planned and widespread and the Chachila, and perhaps could be seen as a deviation from the original model, because there is a basis for Mechiras Chametz that's described in the Tosefta, as we noted, and is brought in Halacha. But there are those who argue that that was meant to be limited. The case is described of a man who's on a boat, and travel then was even less predictable than it is nowadays. So the trip got longer than it was expected. And all of a sudden now Pesach is upon us. And the person has chametz with him that probably is his whole livelihood. And he was going to sell it somewhere, and now he's stuck with it, and Pesach's coming. So if he's going to just throw it off the side of the boat, then that's going to cost him his livelihood. So the Tosefta mentions that he has this option of transferring the ownership to the person he's traveling with, the non-Jewish person he's traveling with, and reacquiring it afterwards. So that seems to be a good model. The question is whether what we do is too much beyond that. So some of the Rishonim have an interpretation that may call things a little bit into question, or may sound like it calls things a little bit into question. So to go into some of the detail about the history of that. So one interpretation that is problematic for us is the interpretation of the Ritva and the Maram Chalava and a few others that interpret a phrase in a specific way. There is a phrase that appears in some of the Rishonim who talk about this case, which is not clear where the phrase comes from, whether it's a girsa that some of the Rishonim had, or whether it was an addition in some of the Rishonim. But there is this condition that you can do this ubilvad shelo yarim, as long as it's not a harama. And the Beis Yosef quotes the Rebbein Yerucham, what do you mean as long as it's not a harama? The whole thing is a harama. So somehow it's a harama and we allow it. What exactly is the definition of a harama? It's not easy to define. It means either some kind of an evasion or some kind of a falsehood. And those are different applications. And it's not clear from the back and forth exactly which definition is being used in which source. So that itself is a problem. So that also needs to be figured out. So the Rishonim, when they say that it can't be a harama, they have different understandings of what that means. So one of the interpretations that's problematic for us is the view of the Ritva and others. That means that you can't do it every year. So it's a good question why that should be. Now that would be clearly problematic for us because we do our Mechiras Chametz regularly. So if that is indeed a condition of the applicability of this situation, that would be a big problem for us. So luckily for us, it's not brought the halacha in any of the codes. It's a question why it would be a condition at all. There is a tshuva of the Laharis Nasan who quotes the Ritva as a reason to say in a different context that haramos overall shouldn't be used in an ongoing fashion. So it's a little bit difficult because that Ritva is in the context of Mechiras Chametz, and there it hasn't been accepted. So that already is the difficulty in quoting it lahalacha, but also we have to figure out why he even said it at all, and why it should be a problem, and maybe his issue may have been limited to mechiras chametz, because what should be the issue with doing it every year? Even if one assumes that it is only justified by a great financial need, so that itself isn't necessarily limited. There were those who felt that it was based on great financial urgency, and that it was because the Jews, particularly at certain points in history, were involved in the liquor industry, and this was where their livelihood came from, and it was very hard for them to completely divest of all of that, or close to impossible to completely divest of all that before Pesach. So that may be the case, and that may call into question the utilization of Mechiras Chametz for less necessary items, things that are less crucial to our living. But even if that is the case, and the Elie Rabba does have a whole speech about that, the Elie Rabba, an important commentary on the Shulchan Aruch, so the Elie Rabba, he feels that Mechiras Chametz should be limited only to those who make their own Chametz Pesach, or make their own Chametz products for sale to others, and they do so in large quantities, and they can't get rid of all of that before Pesach. But he felt that those who just buy products from others that they resell should have Pesach in mind, and buy in smaller quantities, or try to return unsold inventory to their distributors. So even if you have those limitations, but it's not clear why that should mean you can only do it once. That could certainly be the scenario every year. Why that should create a limitation to only one year is really not clear. So it's also noteworthy that the Ritva is so serious about his limitation that he thinks it would create a limitation that the chametz should be usur after Pesach. So if that's the case, so it sounds like it's more that it's more than just saying it's not right. We could have thought that his issue is that essentially there's something a little bit sketchy, or there's something a little bit inappropriate about this plan, that you're somehow gaming the system. And okay, so when you're stuck and it's an emergency, you can do it, but to do it every year, that's already not right. But if that's the understanding, so then why should it aser the chametz after the fact? That's not the kind of consequence that would make sense. So presumably the fact that the Ritva discusses that, unless you want to say that he's saying that as a knas, the fact that the Ritva invokes that as an issue sounds like it's something even more fundamental and probably unique to Mechiras Chametz. So perhaps what his issue is that he's worried that, let's say, you're selling it to the same non-Jew every year. So then the purchaser is going to start to get the feeling that he's not really purchasing it, and that he's just watching it, and that he's obligated to return it to you after Pesach. And as we'll discuss in a little bit more detail, that itself is a problem. So if that's the feeling he should get, so then maybe that would be an issue. And maybe it could be so much of an issue, even though probably not, but maybe it could be so much of an issue that you could at least talk about the possibility that that might disqualify the sale. So if that's the Ritva's concern, so that would be specific to Mechiras Chametz, and that wouldn't be an issue for Haramas overall. So the fact that the Lahoros Nosson quotes the Ritva as applying to Haramas overall would still be difficult then for a number of reasons, because again, we don't accept it lahalacha, and it doesn't seem necessarily to be based on a Harama general kind of concern, but something specific to Mechiras Chametz. There are also those who suggest, and there's an interesting shuv about this in the Sefer Shem Olam, where he has a lot to say about this, that should we make note of the fact that this whole concept is presented in the context of the story of a person who's on a boat and Pesach all of a sudden happens. Maybe that's in order to make the point that it is specifically under these circumstances that it's allowed. But under more l'charchila, predictable circumstances, maybe it shouldn't be allowed. So that's an interesting question. It's also noteworthy then that the Shulchan Aruch doesn't bring the circumstances into his psak, but the Rambam does. So is there anything to make of that fact that the Rambam incorporates the situation into the psak? Especially in light of the fact that there is no other indication from the Rambam that he does consider it limited in any way. So there are those who suggest, it's interesting, there's a discussion about this in the Sefer Minchas Aaron. It's a Sefer that has a couple of volumes on Chumash. Aaron Miaznik is his name. He has a couple of volumes on Chumash, and he has a volume on Pesach, where he has a lot to say about Mechiras Chametz and a whole section about the notion of whether Mechiras Chametz is a harama. There's a whole section devoted to that. So there he discusses the possibility that the Rambam bringing the boat as part of his codification here is actually meant to be a broader heter rather than a more limited heter. So how would you see that? Because the significance of the boat is actually to show that here, clearly, this individual did not plan originally on selling his chametz to the person traveling with him. He's traveling in order to go somewhere else and sell his chametz there. If he wanted to sell to the guy next to him, he could have sold it without traveling. So the fact that he's traveling in the first place indicates that he means to send it somewhere else. And if he's selling it to the guy on the boat, so it must be that he's only doing it for the sake of dealing with Pesach in a pretty self-evident way. And nonetheless, it's still acceptable. So perhaps that's the Chiddush, the way the Rambam is trying to convey, that it's even more expensive than you would have thought, that it's allowed even in that case. So that's an interesting interpretation. But one way or another, this limitation that it should be only for the usage of a temporary situation or a emergency situation, and it shouldn't be something that should be repeated from year to year, seems to be not a situation, not a limitation that's accepted by halacha. And even if one feels like the Eli Rab and others that it should be limited to more necessary circumstances, even that, it's not clear why that should dictate that it should only be occasional. And even that circumstance itself is something that could repeat itself from year to year and doesn't necessarily carry with it a obvious logic for that limitation. So then another interpretation that you find in the Rishonim of the idea of Ubuvad Shelo Yarin is that it has to be taken out of the house. So that would seem to be problematic for us, because we generally, for the most part, don't take our chametz out of our house. I don't want to speak for everyone. There are those who are machmir to put all the chametz that's sold into a box and actually remove it from their house. That's certainly a very admirable chumrah, but probably the vast majority of people don't do that and leave the chametz in a separate section of the house. So is that a problem, that we're not fulfilling this condition of actually taking it out of the house? So not necessarily. And here we should appreciate that the nature of this condition was reinterpreted and kind of evolved over the centuries. And that is for good reason. So we'll try to explain a little bit how it evolved and then explain why it was open to that, why it was conducive to being reinterpreted. So the idea that it took on different forms. So first, that basically begins with the Bach, that the Bach maintained that, and this is also the position that's quoted in the Magen Avraham and the Chok Yaakov and others, that it's enough to sell the room of the house where the chametz is, and also to provide the purchaser with the key to the area where the chametz is. Now, the Bach happened to insist that turning over the key was crucial, and there were those who felt that if you don't turn over the key, so that's a blatant harama, we call a harama nikeres, and that is too far over the pale. And there's a whole history of debate about different levels of harama and the interaction with dinim d'oraisa and dinim d'rabbanan, and perhaps we'll get to that, we'll see. But there are some who feel that a very blatant harama is unacceptable, even if you're dealing with dinim d'rabbanan, and the Taz discusses that in this context, and thought that this detail was a very big deal, that if you don't turn over the key, so then the chametz would even be usher afterwards, because that would be just too much of a harama. So that was one of his conditions, the Bach, even though, again, he is allowing you to leave it in the house with that circumstance. But together with that, what's the purpose of the key? So the key is really for a dual purpose. So that is, in totality, to make sure the sale is genuine, and it does so in two ways. One, it provides access to the purchaser, and also, together with that goal, is that there shouldn't be any seal that indicates Jewish ownership that may dissuade the purchaser from entering and taking the chametz. And that itself was a big discussion. The Baal HaTanya in the Shulchan Aruch HaRav wrote that for a Jew to put a seal on the chametz even after the sale, he said that would be usur, but wouldn't necessarily disqualify the sale, because it doesn't actually reduce the rights of the purchaser in any way. But to fail to provide the key, or even to take back the key after the sale was made, he held that would possible the sale, because then the purchaser wouldn't have any access to the chametz, and couldn't be said to have any personal responsibility for it. Happens to be that his grandson, who's the author of the Tshuva Semech Tzedek, so he discussed a couple ways in which there could be tzadim lakula, there could be reasons to be lenient, especially if there were ways that you could explain that the failure to give the key wasn't because of a intentional denial of access. So again, that's the point, that there's two things going on here. One is that you want to actually provide access, and the other is that you don't want to make a statement of denying access, because that conveys to the purchaser that you are not serious. So you want to actually give him the access, and you also don't want to send a message of a lack of access. So here the Magen Avraham quotes the Maaseh Binyamin that they were makel after the fact, at least if you don't turn over the key. And the Noda Behuda and Atshuva was very against the idea that failing to give the key could possible the sale, saying that even if you were insincere, and that was contained in the fact that you're not giving the key over, we still say Dvarim Shebelev Einam Dvarim. So if you made explicit conditions of sale, that's still going to hold. And if the case were to be taken to court, the fact that you didn't give the key is not going to be a basis for the court to negate the sale. So therefore, says the Noda Behuda, that's not going to take away the validity of the sale. But he says it's still wrong to do. That would still be a harama to not give the key. And you could find the shtar of the Noda Behuda in the tshuvos of his son. The Shiva Sion is the tshuvos of the Noda Behuda's son. And it prints there the shtar of the Noda Behuda. And he writes there in very strong terms that the key has to be given to the purchaser, together with full, unrestricted access, and that there can't be any mark of the purchaser, that there must be just clearly for him, and nothing can get in the way at all. And there is an interesting discussion also in the Tshuva Shalit Zion, which is Rav Dov Eliezerov, where he talked about what if you have somebody who, for whatever reason, was imprisoned, and his chametz is with him and can't be legally separated from him. So is that therefore impossible to sell, since he can't give access to the purchaser for whatever legal reason? So he asserts there that since it's not the seller's fault, because it's the law that's stopping him, so that's not any kind of indication that he's trying to keep the purchaser from taking it, so therefore the sale could still be okay. And he quotes that Rutzi Pesach Frank also agreed with that, which is an interesting application. And again, the point being that as long as you are not yourself trying to make the statement that the purchaser shouldn't have access, at least b'di'evet, that's not going to necessarily invalidate the sale, even though if that's not l'chachila what we're trying to do. And the Divrei Malkiel, in his shtar that was printed in his Shuvas, so he made it clear that the purchaser has to be allowed access to the property as whatever needed to the property of the seller overall in order to access the chametz. And he wrote that he was surprised that in earlier shtaros he didn't think that that was made clear, and he thought that that was a problem, that that's something that you do have to make clear. So that all relates to this concern and to this condition of the key and how important that is. But still, the Mishnah Berurah was Mikel regarding this, saying that he thinks it's pashut, that just saying where the key is enough. You don't necessarily have to actually give him the key, you just have to tell him where the key is. So this, again, highlights that we have these same two points, that there needs to be actual access to the chametz, and that you're not sending a message of denial of access. And Rav Shlomo Kluger has a tshuva, which was printed in the Sefer Neos Desha, which was about a much broader point regarding Mechiras Chametz. Maybe we'll have time to talk about more detail, we'll see, where he wrote that it's only necessary to give the key because if you were to refuse to turn over the key, so then that itself looks like a harama. But if it's not practical to turn over the key, let's say, for example, if it was lost, so then that wouldn't be such a message, and therefore it wouldn't necessarily create any implications. And the Shvilei David, he also notes that if, let's say, the Jew has other property in that same area, which is permissible, which is not chametz, which he may need access to, so then holding on to the key so that he can access that is not going to send any discouraging message to the purchaser, and therefore that would be okay. And in order to accomplish these goals, so many poskim in the modern era have understood that the key, therefore, is really only necessary in those situations when the chametz was sold directly by the original owner. But nowadays, that we have a mass sale that's carried out by an agent, generally the rabbi, so it's enough to put in the contracts that the keys are available to the purchaser on request. So if he asks for the key, so that's going to be made available to him, but he doesn't necessarily have to be given the key physically. That's discussed in the Tshuvas Maharash Engel and the Tshuvas Betzel HaChachma, and that's become a modern representation of that. Nowadays also, so we have combination locks, so sometimes we indicate what the combination is, or there are neighbors who have the keys, and we tell them who you can reach. Or we have cell phones. So you say, okay, here's the cell phone number, and here's how you'll be able to reach the owner at any time, and he will give you access, and that could accomplish the same thing. There were those historically who didn't even have this whole requirement of the key, just as far as this whole development, and Prichadash responded to the Bach and a comment, and he didn't agree to the whole requirement of turning over the key. And Shula Mikutno, in his Shuvas Shuvas Malko, he thought that the key was just Chumra. So that's a part of how we accomplish this whole goal. What about this idea of selling the room? So here, it's also very interesting how this developed, and this has kind of changed a bit. So the notion that we should sell the room that the Chametz is in, so there were many who argued that we shouldn't actually sell the room, but rather we should rent the room or lease the room. And the Avni Nezer in a tshuva, that's Shin Mem Vav, so he explained that this is actually very much crucial to the whole Harama issue. And he wrote that it's one thing to believe that you are genuinely selling your chametz. Okay, so, and he's understanding Harama as falsehood. And that's, again, a issue that kind of changes in different contexts, whether the concern of Harama is that you're getting out of something or whether it's that it's fake. So, you see, that was reflected. We mentioned the Ritva a few minutes ago. It could be that the Ritva was understanding the Harama issue as an evasion, that, okay, it's really not the proper way to do things, so therefore you shouldn't do it too often. You should only do it when it's absolutely necessary. Although, maybe the fact that it was interpreted as possibly disqualifying the chametz meant that he saw it as something that would falsify. So it's not clear how you translate harama, and it has nafkaminas. So here the Avni Nezer is addressing it in terms of just how genuine could the sale be. So if we're supposed to believe that you're actually selling your chametz, okay, says the Avni Nezer, that I could believe. But the idea that you are selling a part of your house and not the whole house, that, he says, is not believable. Whatever the purchase price is, that simply makes no sense. And that's not something that people do. So therefore, says the Avni Nezer, that would be a total harama. And the position of the Bechor Shor, which maybe we'll go into more detail, time permitting, maybe not, is that haramos are not acceptable by Dinim Daraisa. Although he quotes it as, he quotes the Bechor Shor a little differently, he quotes it as referring to Haramos on Pesach. The Bechor Shor had a whole opposition, which got kind of morphed into a opposition to Mechiras Chametz, and a labeling of it as a Harama, and then saying that Haramos are only acceptable for Dinim Derabanan. So what the Bechor Shor was actually talking about was they had a practice in his day of selling animals, of selling the cows, because the feed for the cows was chametz. And the concern was that the animals would get skinny on the inferior feed over the course of Pesach. So to avoid that, they would sell their animals to non-Jews, and that way they could be fed actual chametz over the course of Pesach. So the Bechor Shor thought that was terrible, because he thought there's no way that there is a sincere selling of the animals. And since benefiting from chametz is itself an Issur D'oraisa, he thought that was a harama involving an Issur D'oraisa, and you can't have haramas for Torah law. So he had three principles, each one of which was subject to debate into machlokes. But the three principles were, although one of them may not even be what he meant, but it was that mechiras chametz apparently is a harama, and that haramos are not valid or not acceptable for Torah law, but it's okay for our mechiras chametz because we're only dealing with rabbinic law. Why is that the case? Because we use bittul. And the Gemara in the first parak of Psachim says, b'bittul ba'alma sagile, in order to deal with the Issur D'oraisa, bittul knocks it down to a drabanan. So therefore, okay, fine, we're only dealing with an Issur D'rabanan. So many objected to that understanding, because the chametz that we sell and the chametz that we're mevatel is presumably not the same chametz. And how could you sell something that you have considered to be meaningless? And that presumably undoes the whole bittul. So there was major disputation as to that. And it comes out, actually, that there are probably four approaches to the three positions of the Bechor Shor. That there are those who accept all three positions. There are those who deny all three positions. And that Mechiras Chametz is not a harama, that there isn't any limitation to Dinim D'Rabbanan. And that if there were, then that wouldn't help us because our Chametz is dealing with Daraisas. Bittul doesn't knock it down. And there are those who split. And those who split Lekula, those who split Lechumra. You could split Lechumra, it's probably actually a relatively common position, even if they don't necessarily know that they're dealing with the position of the Bechor Shor. But maybe just intuitively, they may agree with the first two and not the third, that they may feel that Mechiras Chametz is a harama, and that there's something inappropriate about using haramas for Dinim D'Oraisa, but not agree with the third premise that bittul changes anything. So there's a position many have to only sell chametz d'rabbanan seems to be essentially taking the first two premises without the third. And there are those who also split lakula. I mean, they don't necessarily take the first two premises, but they take the last premise that bittul does something to knock it down to a d'rabbanan, and for that reason they feel you can rely on kulas in regards to the sale, because there's only an issur d'rabbanan involved. So that's regarding this whole position of the Bechor Shor. But as the Stechemed points out, the whole thing may be an over-reading, because there's a line following this where the Bechor Shor says that it could be that truth is, when it comes to Mechiras Chametz, they actually do it sincerely. That really his whole concern was about defining harama as a fake-out. And it's about the question of whether it's really happening sincerely. So when it came to selling the animals, that was really the subject he was talking about. So that he found impossible to believe that was happening sincerely, because here you don't have such a motivation, because you're just trying to keep the animals from getting a little skinnier. And so in order to accomplish that goal, to believe that people were actually selling their expensive animals to purchasers who couldn't afford them and not moving them into their possession, the whole thing didn't seem like it had any reality to it. But when it comes to the chametz itself, he wrote, so there you only have two choices. Either sell it sincerely or you have to destroy it. So, okay, maybe you are actually selling the chametz sincerely. That he could believe maybe was potentially sincere. So that line gets missed, and many people quote the Bechor Shor as opposing Mechiras Chametz and holding it to the harama. But it's all in the details, and it could be that the Mechiras Chametz itself, that he actually was okay with. So it's all really in how it's done and how credible it is. So that's what the Avinezer is addressing here. The Avinezer is saying, okay, you want to sell your Chametz, I could believe that. But to say that you're selling a room in your house, and you're not actually moving out of that room, you're not actually taking the room away from your house, still part of your house, so, and no one's living there, and what does that mean to say that you are actually selling it? That doesn't have any meaning to it. So he thinks that's a real complete harama. So therefore, and he quotes the Bechor Shor, again, it kind of morphed over the generations, as saying that haramas are unacceptable on Pesach. That was the distinction there. So therefore, in order to avoid a harama, so it has to be a rental rather than a sale, because that people do rent out parts of their houses without selling the whole house. And that, he says, so that could be acceptable. You could rent out part of your house, so that has to be the way you do it. You have to rent it out rather than actually selling part of the house. And this was also the view that a number of other poskim took. So in the Tshuvas Avnei Tzedek, he discusses this in other contexts. So, for example, he notes that you can't have a concept of a Jew selling his house or his field every Shabbos to allow a non-Jew to work there. And he says that would be an open harama, basically saying that there's no believability to the idea that a person is selling his real estate just for that time period. So he's focusing not so much on the idea of it being only a part of a house, but the idea of a temporary real estate sale not having much meaning. And that was also the thinking of the Tshuvas Chesed Avram. It's Avram to Omim. So he said, let's say if somebody has a knowledge that one of his relatives is about to die and therefore wants to sell his store for the period of Shiva, because he's not supposed to be engaging in business during that time. So he figures, okay, he'll sell his store to allow the store to continue engaging in business. So the Chesed Avram doesn't allow that, because he says the idea that somebody would actually sell his business over a temporary time just to avoid the loss of a week's profits, he didn't think that that had plausibility. As opposed to when it comes to chametz, that there, in the case of chametz, the chametz is going to become worthless if you don't sell it. But here, that's not necessarily the case. It's only a week's loss. That's not the same thing as the chametz itself becoming worthless, which again is the same svara that the Bechor Ashur used to compare the chametz to the animals. But he says it is believable that the Ovel may want to rent out his store, especially since he's not going to be able to use it. So therefore, he would allow the rental of the store during that time. And the tshuva is Beis Shlomo, so he has a tshuva about Pesach, and he holds that the selling of rooms in a house is even less believable than the sale of animals that the Bechor Ashur was upset about. And therefore, he also takes that position that it has to be a rental rather than a sale. And a lot of poskim also have that for other reasons. And that has to do sometimes with the laws of real estate. So, for example, Rav Moshe Feinstein has a tshuva also where he talking about something else, but he writes in that context that it's pashut, that for chametz purposes, real estate should be rented rather than sold because of the legal requirements from civil law that gets in the way. So all of that contributes to this whole issue of whether it should be rented rather than sold. Rav Sternbach in his Tshuvas van Hagos and Chelek Zayin has a additional issue, which is interesting. So he notes that there are people who, whether or not they sell their chametz, they rent out parts of their house before Pesach so that they should be pater from bedikas chametz. And in that context, he brings up the question of whether you're allowed to rent out just random areas within rooms in a house. And he says that that should be a harama because no real rental would happen in that way. So in that context, he says, so mechiras chametz seems to also be a harama, but be accepted. But he says, in that case, the harama is later, because that's where he sees it in the reversal of the sale. That's his interpretation. Again, we see there's many different interpretations of what the issue is. But the sale itself, he feels, is unaffected by that. But says if the very sale itself, the whole terms don't make any sense, so that is the situation in that case. So he says when that's the situation, so then that's a harama that's unacceptable. So that goes to the view of the Avinezer and all these others who felt that we have to rent or lease out the areas rather than sell, and that's what many do nowadays. Even though there were those who took the other position, like the Nesivis and the Makor Chaim, who held that it was important the other way, that they should be davka sold rather than rented, and that was the original position of the Bach. Okay, so these are some significant kulas, it would seem, from the original position of having to actually take the chametz out of the house, but we can appreciate them when we consider the question of why it is that there is such a requirement in the first place. Because it's not so obvious why there should be such a requirement, that the whole issue isn't so obvious, because the Gemara in Psachim and Avav, and the Shulchan Aruch Paskins this way, maintains that chametz in your house, that is the property of a non-Jew, is permitted, is not a violation of Bal Yirah, Bal Yimatzeh. The Gemara says that chametz of a non-Jew or chametz of Hekdesh is not a violation of Bal Yirah, Bal Yimatzeh. Remember Shechter once in Shir explaining that if your non-Jewish worker walks into a house with a sandwich, so that's not a violation of Bal Yirah, Bal Yimatzeh. If your Bal Yirah walks in, he's talking about chametz of Hekdesh. So, in any event, so here the idea of the chametz being the property of a non-Jew that's in your house is not a violation of Bayirah Bayimatzeh, so it's not clear why there should be a need to take the chametz out of the house to begin with. So some understand that this is just a chumrah, which comes from the fact that this is not a permanent transfer, and therefore we have a greater concern that you may come to eat it. So it sounds like that from the Chazon Ish and a few others, that there is a greater chumrah here that attaches itself to that. The Prichadish sounds like that, but that's not necessarily a function that has to do with the ownership issue, that the ownership issue doesn't actually require that it is removed from the house physically. But this is a chumrah that connects to other issues, but the sale could be final and valid even without that. So the fact that we have evolved other ways to address it, that's not going to necessarily be so surprising. It's also noteworthy that the Bach, in his original formulation of this requirement, points out that if the Jewish owner were to both have the chametz in his house and also have the keys to enter the location, so then the purchaser is going to doubt the real significance and the real meaning of his purchase, because his access is so much less than that of the original owner. So we try to address that with all of the different ways in which we have adopted this concern, but the point is that we're trying to get endorsement from both sides, that we want the seller to take it seriously and we want the buyer to take it seriously, and that's a part of what we are trying to accomplish. And there are those also who find transferring ownership of the rooms where the chametz is located to have additional purpose also, and some are doing this because of the Bechor Shor's point. So if they agree with the Bechor Shor that the sale is a harama and that it's not effective for dinam daraisa, but like we mentioned, the split, they don't accept the third position, that bittul knocks it down, so then they want another way to knock it down. So there are some, such as the Aran and the Ramban and the Vilna Gaon, who hold that chametz that's owned by a Jew but not stored on the property of the Jew is not an issur daraisa. So the real estate transfer is going to then accomplish that purpose of shifting it over to a derabanan, and that'll be the way that'll satisfy the Bechor Shor and allow it through that avenue. So that's an additional interpretation. Okay, so we're getting a little bit late, so maybe we'll stop there. Many other issues in Mechiras Chametz, so we still have a few weeks before Pesach. Maybe we'll find another time between now and Pesach to address a few other issues. I don't know if next week we'll talk about this, maybe something else. We'll see, maybe something partial related. But for now, we'll pause here. And I wish you all a good Shabbos, and now it should be only good things.